"Never mind," I mumbled. "Forget I said anything." I hurried out the door, not looking at him as he held it politely open. I had wished for him to learn some manners, but they fit so uncomfortably on him that it didn't help. He remained an otherworldly creature, out of place in my life, and impossible to imagine as my future husband. Chapter 12. My sleep was fitful, disturbed by visions of a handsome prince with piercing blue eyes who looked down into an elaborate handheld mirror reflecting an image of me tossing and turning in my bed. Every time I woke, I found myself in a cold sweat, clutching my blankets around my neck. As the hours passed, a new thought crept into my mind. I couldn't believe it had taken so long to occur to me. If the mirror could be used only by royals, and only to see your own people, would it not be possible for it to show me Lily? I might not be able to use it to communicate with her, but I could at least reassure myself of her safety. But the beast had already refused to let me see it, and if he considered it a bargaining chip, something to use to pressure me into agreeing to our wedding, I would never convince him to change his mind. Which meant I needed to find it on my own. By the time the sun rose, I had given up on sleep entirely and was busy planning. After his attempt to bar me from his wing of the palace, I felt sure I would find the mirror there. But I would need to ensure that the beast himself was absent before beginning my search. I hadn't seen him wandering around the palace except for when he had found me in his wing. I suspected he spent most of his time there. The only other place I had seen him outside of meals was with his stallion, and Matthew, the stable master, seemed to have a privileged position with him. I would wait until he went to visit his stallion, and then I would find the mirror and finally see Lily. I could see the corner of the stable building from my window, but I would need a clearer view to ensure I didn't miss his arrival, which meant finding a better position somewhere in the castle. I tried to remember the many rooms I had visited on that side of the building. Hours later, I wistfully watched the sun shining on the flowers and reflecting from the snow. I still hadn't explored the gardens, and they looked much more appealing than the hard seat I had managed to drag over to the window of the unused chamber. But I didn't want to miss the beast leaving the castle. I thought of my sister, and the emptiness in my mind without her familiar presence. It would all be worth it if I could get even a glimpse of her and be sure she was well. As the angle of the sun crept around and the warm rays shone directly onto me, I found it hard to keep my eyes open and my mind alert. My lids kept drifting shut, my bad night's sleep catching up with me. I eyed the dusty bed longingly. I had asked Lottie to deliver a midday meal to me here, carefully putting in the request when Tara wasn't around, to ensure I wouldn't be questioned for wishing to spend the day in a random, unused bedchamber. But even the food failed to completely dispel the sleepiness. I had just finished pacing the length of the room to stay awake, when I returned to the window and noticed movement. Instantly all fatigue dropped away, energy coursing through me at the sight of the beast's bulky frame striding toward the stables. I forced myself to wait until he had disappeared inside. As soon as I was sure he had gone to visit his stallion, I raced from the room, my feet flying as I headed straight for the beast's wing. As I twisted and turned through the castle, I felt proud of myself for remembering Gordon's tour. All of the corridors looked the same, and it made navigation difficult for anyone who had not grown up familiar with the building. I would have to arrange to have some tapestries hung and statues placed in available niches. I had taken two more turns and was passing the portrait gallery when it occurred to me that for an unthinking moment I had been considering myself the actual mistress of this castle. Planning improvements to it for when I might host guests here. I shook myself. I could not allow myself to be lulled into forgetting this was a large prison, not a home. I didn't slow as I raced past the door to the gallery. In the many hours since I had first conceived of this plan, I had considered all the options. The gallery hadn't contained any pieces of furniture. In fact, there had been no place where a mirror could have been hidden. Instead, I had become increasingly convinced that the only place the beast would keep such a valuable magical object was his own chambers. When I reached the door that Gordon had called forbidden, I stopped. I had accused the beast, either aloud or in my mind, of almost every crime. And yet, only yesterday, I had assured him I would not enter his rooms. And today, here I was. I shook my head. The normal rules did not apply when a monster kept you prisoner in his home. I pushed open the door. I didn't know what I had been expecting, but it had almost certainly involved darkness and gloom. And probably dirt, since Gordon had said even the servants were barred from these rooms. But the beast's chambers were large and surprisingly airy, filled with solid oak furniture, worn silken with age. The stone floor was covered with overlapping rugs of deep red and gold, and I could see no sign of filth or neglect. I couldn't help crossing over to the large windows in his bedchamber, noting his extensive view, which included most of the gardens and the stables. This would have been the ideal viewpoint for my morning's observations, except for the obvious issue. As I watched, the beast appeared astride his black horse, walking toward an open field on the far side of the gardens. The distant figure appeared to twist a little in the saddle, and I stepped back, jumpy. Had he been looking this way? I shook myself and added stern instructions not to waste time on foolish fancies. I needed to start my search. The beast had three interconnected rooms, a bedchamber, a sitting room, and a dressing room. The sitting room seemed the most logical place for such an item, so I began there. As the minutes ticked by, my tension rose. I moved next to the dressing room, observing the strange way his jackets hung when not on his shoulders, highlighting his misshapen frame. I saw no sign of a mirror, however. Finally, I returned to his bedchamber, rummaging carefully through the drawers of his desk, attempting not to disrupt anything. I didn't want to leave any sign of my visit. I could feel the knot of discomfort in my center growing. I resisted the urge to run to the windows to check for any sign of the beast. I reminded myself again and again that I had seen him leave for the beginning of a ride. I had plenty of time to turn all three rooms upside down if need be. As I slid shut the final door, I gave a huff of frustration. Should I search the bed? Did he keep it tucked under his pillow? I hesitated, reluctant to climb onto his large four-poster or touch the place where he laid his head. As I looked around the room, hoping to spot somewhere else to look, my eye fell on a curtain hanging against the wall shared with the sitting room. I frowned at the anomaly. A curtain on an internal windowless wall. I strode over and pulled it back, revealing a large oval mirror mounted on the wall. A simple, elegant frame met at the top to form the outline of a crown. The royal mirror. I berated myself silently. I had allowed my search to be influenced by my dream, but now that I thought about it, I couldn't remember the beast ever referring to it as a hand mirror. I had nearly missed it, when it should have been immediately obvious to me. I had already wasted so much time. I stepped close to the mirror, which reflected my own face back at me. Nothing about it gave any indication that it was anything but an ordinary mirror. But ordinary mirrors were not kept behind elaborate curtains. And the smooth silver of the frame was engraved with a single word, Palinar. If I had still possessed any doubt, it would now have disappeared. This must be the royal mirror of Palinar. I stepped back, wondering how to activate it. Feeling a little foolish, I spoke aloud. "Show me my sister, Lily." After a second's pause, I added, "Please." I focused on her face, identical to my own, yet at the same time so different, and the feel of her voice and emotions in my mind. "Please, please, please," I thought at the mirror. Slowly the surface began to fog, silver clouds obscuring my reflection. "Yes." As I waited impatiently for her image to appear, I couldn't help a small thrill of fear. I had assured myself that I would know if anything truly serious happened to her. But what if that wasn't true? I had received no news for days now. What if Cole had attacked her, seeking revenge? I tried to calm myself. Surely he had been recaptured. The whole of Marin was looking for him, and his family were all in prison, so he had nowhere to turn for shelter. The mirror distracted me from my fears, the fog clearing to reveal an entirely different scene from the bedroom it had previously reflected. I stepped forward, squinting at it in confusion. What was I looking at? I could see no sign of Lily or of any female. Instead, I saw several horses racing across a landscape I didn't recognize. Men in long cloaks rode them, leaning low to encourage their mounts to speed. I could even hear the distant sound of hoofbeats and the wind in the trees. I moved closer again, as if that could somehow bring clarity to the scene, and heard the one in front direct the others to veer to their left. As he began to change his own direction, he glanced back to check that the others were following, and I got a momentary glimpse of his face. I gasped. Cole. As if my exhalation had broken the enchantment, the mirror began to fog again. So, Cole was still free. I wished I had been able to recognize his location and that I possessed some means of communicating it to Lily. I chewed on a strand of hair. I had asked the mirror to show me Lily, but instead it had shown me Cole. What did that mean? I remembered the way my thoughts had veered from my sister to the man I feared might injure her. As the enchantment of the mirror had been at work, my mind had been fixated on Cole rather than Lily. The fog remained in place, clouding the surface rather than returning to its original reflective state. I turned my mind back to my sister, focusing on the feel of her and my own longing to see her. This time the fog cleared more quickly, and when it did, I rushed forward to place my fingers against the surface. Lily. My twin looked pale and tired, her face creased with lines of worry. Given the first vision in the mirror, I didn't need to overhear a relevant conversation to know they had been unable to recapture Cole. And I knew she would be fretting about being cut off from me and what it might mean. If there was one thing Lily hated, it was being powerless to help the people she loved. Lily! I projected her name as forcefully as I could. My hand pressed flat against her image and my mind focused on the feel of our connection. She looked up, a confused expression crossing her face. For a brief moment I felt a ghost of her presence in my mind. The sensation was too weak to form words, instead it was only a wave of grief and fear, tempered with love and hope. I leaned forward to rest my head against the cool glass of the mirror, a single tear slipping down my cheek. Even in the midst of my longing for it, I had forgotten the feeling of peace and fullness that came from connecting with my twin. Movement flashed across the mirror, and I pulled back to see what was happening. Lily had turned at the sound of an opening door, and her face brightened. I didn't need to see the new arrival to know his identity. Only Prince Jonathan, her betrothed, could bring that particular look of love to her face. Sure enough, John moved forward into view and snaked an arm around her, pulling her against his chest.
"I've only just managed to get away from the meetings. I feel like I haven't seen you in forever."
He smiled down at her, and I couldn't help smiling myself. I loved the way he looked at her, as if she gave him strength and purpose. Lily deserved someone who would love her as much as John did. But after meeting her eyes, a shadow passed across his.
"Something's happened. I can see it in your face."
Lily buried her face in his chest, and I could barely make out her muffled words. "I thought, just for a moment, that I could sense Sophie. But when I called, I got no reply."
"Oh, love," he stroked her hair. "Perhaps she found a way to send you a message of sorts. What did you feel?"
Lily straightened and shrugged. "Just her familiar presence in my mind. Love, I suppose. And loneliness, maybe?"
"You know what my father said. The ancient laws will protect her. and the beast cannot harm her while they are bound together by their betrothal. She sighed.
I know. I just wish I knew what happened to our connection.
What if it's gone? Her voice dropped down to a whisper.
Forever.
John looked concerned.
Surely not. You just felt her then, did you not? I'm sure it is only that Palinar is blocking you somehow.
Yes, yes, I'm sure you're right. I could tell from Lily's face that she didn't completely believe it, but she was letting herself trust him as much for his sake as her own. And I haven't even asked you how the meetings went. Was there any word on Cole?
He shook his head, the tiredness creeping into his own eyes.
The captain of the guard believes he has somehow managed to flee across the southern border into Talinos, and he has not gone alone.
Lily frowned and opened her mouth to question him, I was sure, but the mirror had begun to fog again.
No!
I shook my head and stretched out my hand to touch the mirror again.
No, I want to see her again. Show me my sister.
But before the mirror could clear again, the curtain was ripped closed, almost pulling the material loose from the wall in the process. I staggered away from the beast, tripping over my dress and toppling backwards to land on my rear. I expected to look up to see him towering over me, but he had returned to his door, which he was holding open, a thunderous look on his face.
What did you tell me only hours ago? That you would not enter my chambers?
I flushed.
How dare you trespass in here?
His voice reverberated in my mind, and I winced.
How dare you use my mirror when I had forbidden it?
Chapter 13. I finally managed to scramble to my feet.
I didn't mean any harm.
I spoke loudly, over the growl that now filled the room.
I only wanted to...
But my voice trailed off as the look in his eyes combined with my own guilt to send me running from the room. I had meant to flee in the direction of my chamber, but my feet took me in a different direction. When I found myself in the entrance hall, I knew what had brought me here. I had taken enough. My guilt at breaking into his rooms had faded in the face of my anger at the way he treated me like an enemy, or a possession, to be controlled. I needed space. To clear my head. But, more importantly, I needed to talk to my sister. To hear her voice in my mind and to reassure her that I was safe. The afternoon sun had started to set, and I wasn't wearing a cloak. But I didn't consider going back for one. Running down the outside steps, I turned toward the stables. When I burst into the building, Chestnut nickered a greeting, reminding me that I hadn't visited her in a while. I whispered to her as soothingly as my shaking voice would allow, racing to strap on a saddle. Within minutes the two of us cantered down the aisle of orange trees. The beast had told me the gates would be locked, but they were ceremonial more than anything. No fence encircled the grounds. If I could not go through the gates, I would go around them. Sure enough, the end of the aisle was now barred by iron, twisted into elaborate shapes. I turned Chestnut's head, and we trotted down the fence. As I had predicted, it soon disappeared into a large bush, and failed to emerge out the other side. I steered Chestnut around the foliage, urging her onward with my knees. Riding back to Marin wasn't an option, of course, and I wouldn't have tried it anyway, for all the same reasons that had brought me here. But I hoped the block on my connection with Lily might disappear as soon as I passed the boundaries of the castle grounds. As we burst free, I strained my mind, more eager than ever to re-establish the link between us. I hit the wall, but felt it give way a little, as if it weren't entirely solid. I urged Chestnut to continue and thrust my thoughts forward, struggling to find a path through. My days of practice with the servants and the beast had honed my mental capacity, and I felt a new force behind my attempts. With a rush, I broke free of the block, my mind instantly connected with Lily's. I almost fell off Chestnut from the sudden rush of shared emotion.
Sophie! Lily! Oh, thank goodness, thank goodness! I've been so worried!
I could tell my twin was crying. I drew a shuddering breath, fighting my own sob with a smile.
Of course you have. You always are.
Hey!
I didn't have to see her face to picture her watery chuckle.
I've made a lot of progress on that, I'll have you know. John's been assisting me.
I laughed back at her, reveling in the moment.
John's as bad as you are. You know that, right?
Sophie, what happened? Where have you been?
The situation is bad here in Palinar, Lil. I wouldn't have made it through the wilderness if the beast hadn't sent his royal carriage for me. But it seems his castle and grounds here are protected. Only I think the protection is blocking our connection somehow. It happened as soon as I arrived. And seriously, it's hard to describe the magic here, but I've never seen anything like it.
I sent her a mental picture of the Isle of Orange Trees, full of blossoms and fruit, the sun bouncing off the orange globes to strike the snow below.
Is that snow? In the middle of summer?
Among other things. The whole place is like this. And the servants are invisible and the beast can't speak and I think the rest of his family is dead.
I blurted it all out, knowing it would make little sense to her but needing to let it out.
And no one will speak to me about the curse. Oh, and the beast has a magic mirror. Apparently all the kings have one. Ask John about it. I saw you in it, but I also saw Cole. He was riding with some other men.
What? Where?
I tried to describe the setting, but it sounded as generic as it had looked. She sighed.
He truly has escaped into Talanos like we feared, then.
Nowhere in Marin looks like that.
But never mind him. Are you all right? Has this beast mistreated you? And did you say the servants are invisible?
I could tell she had no more idea where to start than I did. I took a deep breath, no longer paying attention to Chestnut, who had dropped to a slow walk.
Oh, Lily. Tears leaked down my face. It's so good to hear you again. I've been so lonely.
I knew it. I should never have let John convince me. I'm coming after you.
No, Lily, promise me you won't. Not until I've learned more about the curse, at least.
I wished I could reach out and shake her.
Didn't you hear what I said? Even I wouldn't have made it without the beast's intervention. You'll be ripped apart by the wolves.
A remembered echo of their howls sounded through my mind, so real that I shivered. And then I heard it again. I gulped. That hadn't been a memory.
Sophie? Sophie, what is it?
Lily had instantly picked up on my change of mood.
Nothing. I just thought I heard something.
I turned Chestnut around and pointed her back in the direction of the castle. At least, I hoped it was the right direction.
Heard what? Wait, where are you now? How are you talking to me?
I had to leave the grounds to get through, but I'm heading back now. If our connection cuts off, you'll know why this time.
Heading back? Sophie? Sophie, can you hear wolves?
She sounded like she had started to hyperventilate, the sound creeping into her projections. Another chorus of howls rang out, sounding much closer than the last ones. I urged Chestnut faster.
Shouldn't we have passed back into the grounds by now?
Why had I let myself be so distracted? I should have stopped Chestnut as soon as I connected with Lily. The next howl seemed to come from in front of us, and I jerked backwards. Chestnut stopped altogether, pawing the ground and neighing loudly. I tried to urge her on, but she wouldn't budge.
"Come on, Chestnut, come on,"
I murmured, trying to keep the fear out of my voice. But my blood had now started to pound and my hands to sweat. Was that the pad of paws I could hear? And heavy breaths in the now darkening air. As if to make things worse, a flurry of snow landed on Chestnut's mane. I brushed it off and tried to soothe her with my hands.
Come on, girl. We can do this.
She danced beneath me, squealing now in fear. I looked up and straight into the eyes of a large grey wolf. I screamed and twisted to my right, only to be confronted by two more wolves. Spinning my head to the left, I saw another one.
I was surrounded.
Part 2. The Prince. Chapter 14.
Sophie! Sophie!
Lily was screaming in my mind, but I was too focused on the wolves to respond. Did Chestnut and I have any hope of outrunning them? Chestnut squealed again and half-reared, flashing her hooves at the wolves. I gasped and hung on, knowing if I was thrown from her back I would have no chance. When she landed back on the ground, she danced to one side, huffing and snorting. All the wolves were growling now, and I suspected she was about to make a dash for it whether I wanted her to or not. I felt naked and exposed on her back. If only I had something, even a sturdy branch, to defend myself. If a wolf leaped at us, I had no way to whack it away. I shifted my seat, keeping my eyes on the wolf that seemed to be the leader. Leaning low over Chestnut's neck, I prepared to urge her into a life-and-death gallop. My eyes darted around, looking for the clearest gap in the circle of the pack. Sophie!
They've got me surrounded, Lily!
I knew I must be terrifying her, but I was too scared myself to try to temper the fear that pounded through our connection.
Chestnut and I are going to make a run for it, I gulped. But I don't know if we'll make it. I love you.
I slammed shut our link and dug my heels into Chestnut's quivering sides.
Go, girl!
I screamed as she leaped forward. I directed her between the two smallest wolves, and somehow she managed to break through. The trees flashed past, the short barks of the wolves sounding behind us as they chased us down. The snow flew up around Chestnut's hooves, and she kept having to swerve to avoid trees, preventing us from reaching our full speed. I could feel Lily trying to connect with me, a niggling feeling in the back of my mind as I kept myself close to her. If the worst happened, I didn't want her inside my head. Chestnut turned abruptly, and I grabbed at her mane, struggling to keep my seat. Our new path took us along an outcropping of stone, and I could see grey bodies running along the top, somehow ahead of us. Before I could turn Chestnut the other way, one of them leaped from the stone, flying above us and landing on our other side. Somehow, despite our earlier escape, we were once again surrounded. A growl to my right pulled my eyes back toward the rock just as one of the wolves launched itself at me. I threw myself sideways, knowing it wouldn't be enough to avoid the deadly claws. A familiar roar cut through the sound of the wolves as I half hung off Chestnut, unable to see. One of the howls turned into a whimper, and a heavy weight landed hard against my leg and Chestnut's side, sliding immediately down and away. I swung myself back up, unable to believe my last-minute reprieve. Looking frantically around between the trees, I found the beast. He sat atop his stallion, the two fighting as one, hooves and sword flashing. Already grey bodies littered the ground, staining the snow red. Chestnut neighed and moved toward the safety of the stallion. But before she could place herself behind him, a wolf leaped toward us on the opposite side. I gasped, ducking once more in the saddle. For the briefest moment as I dipped down, my eyes locked with the beast's before his flashed across to the incoming wolf. A second roar filled the air as somehow he swung himself up to a standing position on the stallion's back, launching himself from the saddle and over my hunched body to collide with the wolf. I screamed, sitting back up and trying to pull Chestnut around so I could see them. The stallion neighed loudly, the sound a harsh challenge, as his hooves dispatched a final wolf. The last few members of the pack had now retreated. Only the one in a deadly embrace with the beast remained. Claws slashed out and red blossomed along one of the beast's arms. At the same time, the wolf sank its teeth into his opposite shoulder. The beast roared and ripped the animal's head away, the muscles of his arms straining. The wolf made a final effort to lunge forward, and the beast let go with his right hand, swinging it up and around so fast that his fist smashed into the skull of the wolf before its teeth could sink in. The animal went limp and fell into the snow. The beast stared down at the pile of fur for a moment, swaying as red ran down both his arms. Then he looked up at me, his breath scraping harshly through his throat.
"Why did you try to leave? You know it isn't safe out here."
I stared at him.
"I wasn't trying to leave. I was just..."
I trailed off, realizing I couldn't tell him why I had made the excursion outside the grounds.
"Are you injured?"
I shook my head. No, no, I'm unharmed.
A look, almost like relief, flashed across his face before his eyes rolled back and he collapsed, falling to lie beside his defeated opponent. My eyes widened, and I drew a shuddering breath. I looked again for any more wolves, but could see nothing.
Sophie! Sophie!
I must have relaxed, because unconsciously I had reopened the door to Lily.
What happened?
I'm all right. So is Chestnut. We're both unharmed.
Lily gave a shaky breath of relief.
Don't you ever do that to me again.
What happened?
Did you manage to get back into the castle grounds? I sent her an image of my shaking head.
Then what happened? Are you sure there's no more danger?
It seems clear. For now, at least.
Then you need to get back.
I hesitated.
Sophie, what aren't you telling me?
I sighed and sent her an image of the forest floor around me. She gasped.
Is that blood? What happened to the wolves?
Wait.
Is that the beast?
She sounded half horrified, half fascinated.
Yes.
Is he dead?
I swallowed hard.
I don't know. He just collapsed.
Well, he'll die if he remains there in the snow for long enough.
Her words jolted me into action, and I slid down from Chestnut's back. Slowly I picked my way toward the beast, trying to avoid fallen bodies and splashes of red. The stallion snorted behind me, and Chestnut huffed quietly in response.
Sophie, wait.
Lily's soft projection made me pause. I could tell she had more to say, so I waited silently.
If he dies, you'll be free. And maybe Palinar with you.
We don't know that.
But I bit my lip, a shiver coursing through me.
Free. Free to return home. No longer cut off and alone.
My eyes strayed back to his still form, stark against the white snow. I could get back on Chestnut and lead the stallion back to the castle. I could walk away now, and no one but Lily would ever know. If I took his carriage, I could be back in Marin within 3 days. He hadn't shown any consideration when he pulled me from my life. I owed him nothing.
But still I hesitated, because the scattered bodies of the wolves told me otherwise. An image of him, standing on the rearing stallion's back as he launched himself at the attacking wolf, filled my mind. He had not hesitated for me. I drew a deep breath. I can't do that, Lily.
He's a monster, Sophie. You were there with me in the tourney, and just look at his face now.
I sighed and projected again the mental image of the forest around me.
He may be a monster, but he also saved me. And you can only see the shape of his jaw, not his eyes.
My projection dropped to a whisper.
They're so human, Lily.
I could tell she had started crying again.
But you could come home to me, right now. You know I couldn't. Not really. I would never be able to live with myself. And neither would you if you were here.
A realization hit me. For the first time in my life, I was having experiences my twin was not a part of and could not understand. I would have to trust in my own judgment.
I have to try to help him.
She sighed softly. You were always a better person than me, Sophie. I shook my head.
Not better, Lily. Just different.
Well, you know I'm here for you. No matter what you decide.
I know. But right now, I'm the one who needs to give help, not receive it. I can do this, Lily. All of it. Only I don't think I can risk coming out to talk to you again. Not until I've found a way to break the curse.
I understand. I love you, Sophie.
I love you too.
For some reason, when the connection faded, I didn't feel the same sense of being alone and adrift that I had felt when I first arrived at the beast's castle and discovered myself cut off from Lily. I straightened my shoulders and hurried over to drop to my knees beside the beast. I tried to put an arm under his shoulders, but couldn't even reach all the way across, let alone lift them up. I bit my lip. "Wake up, beast!" I stopped myself and tried again. "Wake up, Dominic! You'll freeze if you lie here in the snow, but I cannot possibly lift you." He stirred, his eyes fluttering partially open before closing again. I tried more forcefully. "Wake up! Now!" His eyes snapped open.
"Sophie."
Wonder sounded in his mental voice, but I didn't stop to analyze the situation. "I need you to get up. Can you do that?" He groaned and tried to rise before falling back into the snow. I looked at the height of his mount's back and realized there was no way he was getting up there. I frowned, wondering if it would take too long for me to go and fetch help. What if more wolves came while I was gone? Or a new snowstorm? What if I couldn't find my way back? I crossed over to the stallion, who snorted and danced, but when I crooned softly, let me approach. I found a coil of rope attached to his saddle. Working as swiftly as I could, I led the horse over to his master and then looped the rope under the beast's arms. I attached the other end to the stallion's saddle, apologizing to the beast as I did so. "I'm sorry, but it's the only way. The snow will cushion you and your cloak will protect you a little, but I need to get you inside to the warmth." He groaned again but made no protest, so I hurried ahead with my plan. Walking in the front, leading both horses, I attempted to pick the smoothest course through the trees, avoiding any rocks that broke through the snow. I kept glancing at the dark shape dragging behind us and wincing. I would never have attempted such a plan if I could think of any other option. It seemed an interminably long journey, far longer than seemed possible given my short trip away from the castle. When I caught sight of the gardens in the distance, my knees wobbled, and I had to force a final burst of strength into them. As I closed the distance, I remembered the only other time I had tried to leave the grounds. Only now did I realize the motivation behind the beast's actions in spooking Chestnut. Not that he had needed to be so imperious in his note forbidding me to leave. A little explanation would have been appreciated. When we actually crossed into the grounds, I almost went limp with relief. But the beast wasn't safe yet. The cold and blood loss were as great a danger to him at this point as a further attack. "Help!" I screamed as loudly as I could. "Help!"
"Your Highness?" The unknown voice sounded confused. "Are you hurt in some way?"
A tiny pause.
"Why do you have His Highness's stallion?"
"It's not me who is injured, it's your prince." I pointed behind the horses to where he lay on the ground. "He's been mauled by a wolf. Call for the castle doctor and gather some others, too. We need to get him inside as quickly as possible." The man, whoever he was, launched into action, calling loudly for a great number of people. We were soon joined by a crowd of voices. I stopped trying to pick out the individual words and let myself be swept along, glad to hand over the responsibility to someone more qualified. The horses pulled away from me, led toward the stables by a lead line that floated, taut, in the air. A particularly loud cacophony preceded the beast lurching from the ground. I trailed behind him, trying to leave enough of a wide berth that I wouldn't run into anyone.
"Princess! Princess!"
A familiar voice penetrated through the fog.
"Tara?"
"Yes, I'm here.
What has happened? There's the most terrible story going around. Ooh!"
From the shocked tone of her exclamation, I assumed she had just seen the state of the beast. Her voice dropped to a hushed whisper I had to strain to hear.
"So it's true, then? You were both outside the grounds?"
I couldn't focus properly on her words, distracted as I was trying to keep track of the beast from a distance. I had expected to see more signs of consciousness from him, now that we had arrived back to such a hubbub of people. But he lay unnaturally still, only the rise and fall of his broad chest assuring me he still lived. Our strange procession made it into the entrance hall, and the chorus of voices seemed to swell even louder. I decided to risk an invisible collision, if such a thing were possible. I wasn't even sure, and approached the beast. but I had no sooner taken a step in his direction than warm, heavy material settled around my shoulders. I looked down to discover I was now wearing a cloak. As soon as the thought crossed my mind, a bone-deep shudder rocked me. When had it become so cold?
"Oh, Your Highness!"
Apparently Lottie had joined us, and she sounded horrified. She must have seen the beast's injuries then.
"Half of your dress is soaked, and your face looks blue. You'll catch your death. Come quickly, and we'll draw you a bath."
Oh, not the beast then. I looked down and discovered to my surprise that I was indeed wet and racked with constant shivers. Somehow, in the excitement of talking to Lily and the fear of the wolves, I hadn't noticed the temperature or my own state.
"You're in shock, I expect," offered Tara. "I saw a similar thing when Gordon went skating on the small pond in the East Gardens and fell through the ice."
"Skating? Surely he must have known it wasn't safe."
"Well, he did after he fell through. That child is always stumbling into mischief, though he always means well enough. But the doctor told us to warm him up and to keep him awake."
I had been certain of my intention to check on the beast, but somehow I found myself in my room, soaking in a hot bath, while Tara and Lottie fussed over me instead. Night had fallen outside. The first night since my arrival that the beast had not asked me if I would marry him in the morning. Would he even be alive come morning? Chapter 15. I slept long and deeply, exhausted on every possible level. I woke to several new aches and a couple of bruises and immediately thought of the beast. What was his state this morning? When I slipped out of bed, a sleepy voice greeted me.
"Good morning, Princess Sophie."
"Lottie?"
A sudden suspicion entered my mind. "Did you spend the whole night in my armchair?"
"I wanted to be here in case you needed anything in the night. You might have become ill after your ordeal."
"That is very considerate of you, but now you need to go to your bed. Just on your way out, if you could please let Tara know to bring me some food."
"I couldn't possibly sleep during the day, Your Highness. Let me fetch your morning meal myself."
I shook my head. "Absolutely not. You need your sleep, and Tara can look after me well enough without you. That's why I have the two of you, remember?"
"Very well, if you wish it."
I could tell from her tone that she doubted my assertion that Tara could manage on her own, but I pretended not to notice anything unusual in her demeanour. I paced the room while I waited for Tara to arrive, alternating between staring out the window at the gardens and sitting on my bed chewing my hair. The previous morning, when I had been planning how to sneak into the beast's chambers, felt like another lifetime. So much had happened since then. It was hard to process it all. Tara must have arrived at a run because I was sitting down to a hot meal within minutes. I had planned to ask her what the kitchen gossip had to say about the beast's condition, but she didn't need any prompting to start sharing.
"I'm so glad to see you well this morning, Princess Sophie. You gave me and Lottie a fright last night. I would have insisted on staying with you, except that Lottie assured me she preferred to take the night shift, and I didn't like to make her uncomfortable."
It was the first sign I had seen of any such consideration, but I refrained from comment.
"And I think it turned out for the best anyway, since Lottie's absolutely hopeless at ferreting out news of any kind."
This airy conclusion made me snort, and reminded me why I had asked for Tara in the first place. The ex-serving maid didn't feel the need to temper her view of reality.
"The doctor popped down for a bite to eat around sunrise, poor man. He looked exhausted, and of course the kitchen staff all mobbed him. We'd already guessed from various requests sent down for supplies that His Highness must have a high fever, but..."
"So the beast is alive still?" I asked, unable to wait through her meandering story for that crucial piece of information.
"Oh, yes, certainly. We have an excellent doctor. It's the prince himself who's the problem."
"What do you mean?"
"He's a terrible patient. He always has been. He can still barely stand, but is apparently insisting on going out to check on his horse."
I put down my fork and rose to my feet.
"Where is he now?
In his bedchamber?
Yes, for the moment at least.
I threw a robe around my shoulders and headed for the door. Pausing in the doorway, I looked back into the empty air of the room. You're not going to protest? Or try to stop me?
Well, I feel sure Lottie would tell me that I ought to do so,
Tara giggled.
Especially since you're wearing your nightgown. But to tell you the truth, I'm just planning to follow you and see what happens.
I laughed. I applaud your honesty and your spirit of adventure. Hurrying down the corridor, I made my way to the beast's chambers, as I had done such an astonishingly short number of hours before. I had never had the same interest in healing as Lily, but I had tagged along for enough of her sessions with our castle doctors to know a few basics. For instance, that someone with a raging fever and significant blood loss shouldn't be stumbling around in the snow. When I reached his corridor, I slowed, and then came to a complete stop in the open doorway of his bedchamber. The sound of voices told me that the room must be full of people, but my view of the beast was unobstructed. I assessed his appearance, hoping that, for him, a servant blocked his view of my rude stare. He was naked from the waist up, white bandages covering the deep cuts on his arm and shoulder. I bit my lip at the sight of his bare chest, covered with a thick layer of hair, and then forced myself to look up to his face. He had propped himself up on one arm and was arguing with someone about getting up. His eyes looked glassy and strange, and his face flushed. A low growl silenced the rest of the voices.
"I am getting up, and there is nothing any of you can say to prevent me. So get out of my way."
"Absolutely not,"
I said loudly. The silence seemed somehow to grow deeper, and the hairs on the back of my neck stood up from the certainty that an unknown number of invisible eyes were trained on me. But I maintained a calm facade as I moved forward into the room. "It is quite apparent, even without the assurances of your doctor, that you are extremely ill. You will remain in bed until such time as he gives you leave to rise." Still silence reigned, and I received the distinct impression that a large number of people were holding their breath.
"Princess Sophie."
The beast remained propped half up in the bed, but he also made no further move to get up.
"I must check on my horse."
"Do not be ridiculous."
I reached his bedside, trying to ignore the way his eyes stayed fixed on me, dressed as I was in only my nightgown and robe. "You have, I can only assume, a great number of grooms and stable hands, not to mention a highly competent stable master. You would only be in the way, as well as inflaming your wounds and your fever to no purpose."
"Indeed."
A mature, weary voice I hadn't heard before leaped in to back me up.
"It is just as the princess says. You must listen to Her Highness Prince Dominic, if you will not listen to me."
I turned toward the sound. "I assume you must be the castle doctor. It is very nice to meet you, sir."
"Oh, no, I assure you the pleasure is all mine. I am Dr. Henshaw, and if you can convince His Highness to remain in his bed long enough to heal, you will be doing him and all of us a great favour."
"Certainly, Dr. Henshaw. There can be no question of his getting up. Perhaps you can give me a brief description of your preferred care regime?" As the doctor eagerly outlined his recommended diet and wound care, a series of strange noises came from the bed. I ignored them. When the doctor finished speaking, a final rumble sounded from the bed. I turned to face the beast. "Yes? Did you wish to say something?" The beast was glaring at me.
"My horse just fought a pack of wolves at my request. I will not rest until I have checked on him."
An unexpected wave of shame washed over me. The beast showed more care for his horse than I had done for Chestnut on my first night. The thought unsettled me, and confirmed my determination not to allow him to further injure himself. I rapidly considered the best way to subdue him, and then drew myself up to my full height, assuming an outraged expression.
"Are you trying to insult me?"
Some of the anger dropped from his face to be replaced by confusion.
"Insult you?"
"I was the one who walked your horse back to the castle and handed him over to your stable. I have just told you that he is unharmed and in good hands. Are you calling me a liar?"
A stifled snort of laughter came from beside me, and the beast turned wrathful eyes on his doctor. I intervened quickly.
"If everyone could please clear the room, His Highness needs the chance to rest. I will remain here with him and will call one of you if need be."
I turned in the direction of the doctor.
"Please have the kitchen send up a meal as you have described."
"I'm not eating that."
The beast sounded more sulky than angry, and I knew I had won. I kept the triumphant smile from my face.
"I will ensure he eats it."
"I'm sure you will, Your Highness. We can all be grateful you're here."
I felt a pang as the last of the servants made their way from the room, talking in whispers. If I hadn't been here, the beast wouldn't be injured at all. I turned back around to find him glaring at me, but most of the heat had gone from his expression.
"Do you really mean to keep me prisoner here?"
I arched an eyebrow at him, and he actually had the decency to look ashamed, his eyes dropping away from mine. With a sigh, he lowered himself back onto the pillow.
"Would you like another pillow?"
I asked, as I potted around his bed, rearranging the tangled blankets. When he didn't answer, I looked at him with both eyebrows raised, and discovered he was staring at me with fascination.
"What?"
"Are you always like this?"
"Like what? Right?" He actually barked a laugh. I grinned back at him.
"Don't worry, Your Highness. I've spent a lot of time with my 3-year-old nephew. I know all about looking after sulky children."
He shook his head, but a smile lingered on his face, the first I had ever seen from him.
"You seem different."
I shrugged and continued pottering around the room. I could hardly tell him the truth. Something had changed. It had changed when I had stared down at him, dying in the snow and considered leaving him there. Before, I had felt powerless, trapped, angry and afraid. But when I had chosen to save him, I had changed the balance of power, even if he didn't know it. I remembered now that I would never be powerless over my own actions and choices. I was no longer here as his prisoner. I had chosen to be here because I believed, had always believed, that I had the ability to save others. And not only my sister and the younger girls of the tourney, but also the people of Palinar who were caught in the curse. And last night, as the beast had saved me from the wolves, it had occurred to me for the first time that maybe Prince Dominic needed saving too. Now I just had to believe I was strong enough to do it. When I had lost Lily, I had temporarily lost my way, forgetting that I had been the one to win the tourney despite her best efforts to stop me. Together we were something of an unstoppable force, but that didn't mean I was weak on my own. And last night I had shown it, making the decision I knew was right, despite every temptation. This morning I found that the beast's fitful temper didn't have the same effect on me as it had previously. He was simply another of the many puzzles I had to solve. Several hours later, while attempting to force him into eating a second bowl of soup, I found my new positivity wearing thin. He had slept most of the morning, waking in a foul mood when he was still greeted with only soup. So my morning had alternated between boredom and bouts of his disagreeable mood. It had taken all of my willpower not to pull back the curtain and ask the mirror to show me Lily while he slept. Only the fear that it would wake him had stopped me. But the exercise in self-control had put me in nearly as irritable a mood as him. At last I snapped.
"Stop! You are a grown man and a prince. You appear to have no consideration for anyone but your horse, and it is time you learn to think of others and to act with restraint."
We glared at each other, my chest heaving from my own loss of control.
"You will eat the food the doctor sends and stay in bed until he gives you permission to leave. and I do not want to hear another word about it." I expected him to shout back at me, but the anger in his eyes slowly faded away.
"Very well, Sophie."
I eyed him suspiciously. "That's it?"
"Were you looking for some other response?"
I narrowed my eyes, still wary of his capitulation.
"Perhaps you would be willing to read to me."
"Read?" He barked another laugh.
"Yes, you know. Books, words, stories."
"You like to read?"
"Don't sound so surprised. I lost my ability to talk, not to read."
I glanced at him, surprised at his light-hearted mention of the curse. How would he react if I asked him about it? Reluctantly, I decided not to test it. I didn't want to ruin the first moment of almost rapport we'd had. "What would you like to read?"
"There's a book in the drawer of that table next to my bed. You can start back at the beginning, if you like."
I pulled it out and examined the cover. "Large-scale economics," I groaned. "Mathematics, my favourite."
"You're a princess, aren't you? Aren't these sorts of things compulsory in Arcadia?"
I sighed and sat again. "Yes, unfortunately. That's the problem." I opened to the first page and then looked back up at him. "I'll read you this one if you promise that you'll find me a volume of fairy tales to read next."
"Fairy tales?"
I raised an eyebrow and he shook his head.
"Fine. You can choose the next one."
And despite the boring topic, reading turned out to be an inspirational move. It gave us both something to focus on other than our frustrations, and the beast even ate his simple evening meal with minimal complaint. As had happened earlier when we discussed his nobles, the beast surprised me with his intelligence and balanced perspective on governance. I had never forgotten that he had once been a regular prince. His arrogant attitude made such a thing impossible. But I hadn't considered that he had been a prince trained to rule the largest of these kingdoms. Apparently, his lessons had included more than just ordering his subjects around. The sour note of the evening came just before the doctor arrived to relieve me. I had stood up, ready to leave, when the beast reached out from the bed and grabbed my hand. I stilled, realizing his intention a second before he spoke.
"Will you marry me in the morning, Sophie?"
I ripped my hand away and hurried from the room without speaking. Obviously, I had been foolish to think that anything had changed between us. But in the doorway, I paused and looked back. "Can I recommend that next time you go with, 'Thank you, Sophie'? You might find it's better received." I didn't wait to see his response. Chapter 16. The next morning I was still fuming and considered abandoning the ungrateful beast to do himself whatever harm he wished. But the thought of ingratitude made me hesitate. While it was true that he had neither apologized for driving me from the castle with his temper, nor thanked me for saving his life and then spending my day nursing him, the same could be said of me. The day before we had carefully avoided all discussion of the cause of his injuries, and I had neither apologized for trespassing in his room after I had assured him I would not, nor thanked him for coming to my rescue in the forest. If I truly believed that I had power over my own actions and choices, then my apologies and thanks couldn't be conditional on his. The thought made me squirm all the way through the morning meal, and I changed my mind about which gown I wished to wear so many times that I had to apologize to Lottie. The truth was that I did not want to do it. He may have saved me, but the beast was still an arrogant, imperious, thoughtlessly cruel. "Princess Sophie?" I jumped. "I'm sorry, Lottie, I wasn't paying attention."
"You have no need to apologize to me, Your Highness. I merely wish to know if you wanted your cloak."
I shook my head. "I won't be going into the gardens this morning." As painful as apologizing would be, it was still the right thing to do. And my family had taught me that it was the role of royalty to do the right thing, regardless of how much it might cost.
You seem distracted this morning, Princess Sophie.